Hey, what's up, everyone? How you doing? I am Ben with Henry in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
There you are. Thank you all so much for giving to our Patreon. Without you, none of this is possible. We absolutely love you. And today, we are honored to have with us, she is an author of all things cryptid. She is the, we have royalty in the room, the queen of cryptids. Her new book is out on Tuesday, July 16th. Tuesday, July 16th. Make sure you go out and get this new book. It's called I Know What I Saw. And we are with the author now, Linda S. Godfrey. Thank you so much for being on the show, Linda.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. So I guess the first question, just to sort of get the ball rolling, is inspiration for the book. What was the most fascinating thing that you found out? Because obviously you've known about the world of cryptids for a long time. Why did you choose to compile all of your knowledge now?
Well, this is my 18th book on strange things, people, animals, whatever. So I've kind of been into this for, probably 27 years when I first broke the news, Beast of Bray Road, a werewolf-like creature in Wisconsin. It's been sort of a steady progression ever since.
Did you see a cryptid? Is that what kind of got you involved with the source material? Like, was it, do you have personal experience? Are you related to a cryptid? If I look into a lot of, like, in my family, I feel like several of my cousins could be a part of this book.
Yeah, they could pass.
No, not at all. I really did not have my own experiences until about 20 years had passed, but it happened that back in the winter of 91-92, people around country, living near and on this country road called Bray Road near Elkhorn, Wisconsin, that's southeastern Wisconsin, were saying they had seen something that looked like a werewolf. I was a new reporter with the area newspaper at that time, and I was the one who went and investigated and found out that people were indeed saying they believed they saw this thing running on two legs with the head of a wolf or German shepherd, and they were really frightened by it.
Wow.
And I didn't expect it to be anything more than like a, you know, local folklore type of story, but it really went nationwide and worldwide in just a few weeks after hitting all the AP wires. Because back then, remember, the internet as it is today was not there,
and so of course,
we couldn't say it went viral, but it went national and international very quickly. And I worked at that newspaper for 10 more years, just doing all the usual things. And there was still such high interest in it. Still, I was getting radio show calls and TV show invitations that I thought I'd write a book. And the book, which I expected to end it all because I thought, well, this will answer everything for everybody.
Yeah.
It just brought lots more sightings. And right from the beginning, I was getting sightings of things like Bigfoot, especially Bigfoot, and all kinds of other strange creatures, too, because it turned out people have this pent-up demand for information on things that they or relatives or acquaintances had seen sometimes.
Right.
There are a number of people who have encounters they can't explain, and I guess my books were addressing a need.
I have a couple questions about the nature of cryptids in general. So we cover them pretty often on Last Podcast on the Left, and I think that what we, from what I've read, I am starting to lean more towards almost a mixture of these are actual creatures mixed with they are some sort of psychic projection. As you go into your, like, as you go into these research, like, what do you find? Like, are you searching for a cryptid where there's solid evidence? Like, when you guys go out there, when you write this book, like, would you go and you, like, do you want to see paw prints? Are you looking for droppings?
I do, and I am. Because I think you need to cover all bases, you know, but I'll also have my EMF meter with my tri-field meter to see if there are strange electromagnetic readings or anything like that. I'm prepared for both. And it's interesting because I try to talk to a lot of people, and over the years, the people with the most fitting ideas, the ideas that closely match up to the greatest number of descriptions in the sightings are Native American stories about creatures like, they believe Bigfoot and the upright dog-like or wolf-like creature are originally spirit beings that come from another world. They would call it the spirit world. We today might call it another dimension or another
Right.
Home or plane, you know, whatever you want to call it. and that they can come here to our dimension or world to do things like munch solid food, have procreation, and they can often, they will often show droppings and things like that, physical evidence, but there are some cases, and actually the ones that manifest sort of paranormal indications are the minority, but when they're observed firsthand in daylight by people, you know, I feel they should be treated the same way as those who find actual prints and lay eyes at close on one. So I think it's a gradual range from full body here for some reason to the ability to be totally here somewhere else. And it's a sliding scale, just like light or sound waves are a sliding scale.
That's so interesting. So you mentioned how the first creature that you saw was in Elkhorn, Wisconsin. I am from Stevens Point, Wisconsin, so I know Elkhorn. I know exactly where that is. And then we're talking about Native American lands. Is there anything to do with location? If it is sort of a psychic and physical mixture, does location matter when it comes to what type of cryptid might be seen on the grounds?
That's a very smart question, Kissel.
I do true TV.
Kissel pretends to not do the reading on the show, but I actually think that he's starting to absorb more cryptid knowledge because that's an actual specific question.
You would be surprised what I know. When you can clam up a little bit, Henry. No, I'm just joking. But does that matter when it comes to the location? Does that change the entity that might be seen, or would that alter, the presence? Would that change what kind of cryptid is making themselves known in that area?
I don't know if it, you know, that specifically related to a type of manifestation of a particular creature, but all of them seem particularly attracted to certain types of habitats or sites. For instance, I've been learning recently military installations in general seem very attractive to the upright dog or wolf-like creature. And I think in this book particularly, I go through a bunch I've discovered in European, specifically German military installations, and how many of them have kind of old werewolf legends that go back in time, and then modern sightings of them since World War II, you know, when we were occupied there. The other really frequent place would be any place connected with a sacred site. And often these in the military ones may be one and the same because they like the same sorts of things. They both, the sacred sites and the military sites, both like to be raised up on a hill. So it's strategically, for the military, it's strategically better to have your enemies, you know, climbing up the hill towards you so you can pick them off and so you can see who's coming.
Sure.
And then for the sacred sites, you know, it's always considered the higher elevation, the closer you are to God or the spirits or whatever. So, and cemeteries, same way. And then there also is really usually some close by water, major water source, whether it's a river, freshwater, even the sea. Those things all seem to be good places to be. And then between these creatures, there are certain habitats that they seem to like. The Bigfoot likes a lot of deep places to jump into and elevations. Likes to be able to go up and down and more cover. The upright canine or wolf-like creatures have a big advantage in that they can drop down to all fours at any time. And so many witnesses will say, well, I saw this thing. It looked like a big wolf sitting by the side of the road, and then it stood up.
Right.
Or other ones will say, well, I saw this thing walking or running on hind legs, and when it saw me looking, it dropped down to all fours. So they can... they're harder to completely identify it that way.
Right.
Yes, we do we've been talking about dogmen in our new live show, and part of what we were kind of joking about is about how dogmen, of all the cryptids in the entire rainbow of cryptids, are the one most likely to just be very big dogs, because I think people are just scared of dogs in general.
Right, right. And that is, I mean, if you see something the size of an Alsatian, you know, then that can be kind of scary too. But there's another super big dog. And if you've read the book, I've got a chapter called Dire Dogs. Mm. And this is a separate category I've been sort of collecting for 20 years, because at first they just seemed different than the others, and I didn't know exactly what to do with them. But people would consistently describe these as the size of, say, a miniature pony or a bull calf, something like that. And they don't usually stand up. So I was reluctant to put them in with the body of man-wolf or dog-man sightings. And then it seems like they've been increasing recently. And the big thing is they very often manifest right behind or next to someone's car. And I even have one incident where they actually pushed it with their shoulder, pushed the car into a ditch. And that seems like what they're trying to do in many cases. They'll be kind of banging against it. And people will say, well, its shoulder was the same height as my driver's side window, you know, which is really big things. And they're bigger than dire wolves were. Dire wolves were not that huge. They were maybe 10-20% bigger than an eastern wolf, which is large, but not as big as, say, a bull calf or a Shetland pony, you know.
How do you, I just have a question about, like, how do you do the research on that, or how do we decide, or how do you decide if it's a cryptid or not? When people are having these experiences, do they just, like, blast out, like, something really trippy happened, it looked like a huge dog, and then retroactively do cryptozoologists come in and say, well, that's very possibly not a big dog, that's very possibly a cryptid? Like, or do people, are they so aware of cryptids that they can say, oh, that is a dire wolf or something like that, in the middle of the interaction?
Most of the time, people really don't know how to identify it into one category, but they'll say, they'll say something like, I saw this really weird dog, or I had this weird experience with something that looked like a wolf, or, you know, I think with Bigfoot, they're more likely to say, I think I saw Bigfoot, because the Bigfoot is much better known.
Right.
You know, you have Jack Link's commercials with Bigfoot, and
he sold out. Bigfoot did sell out.
He bought in Kissel. He worked for free for so long, and now he's finally making the ad dollars he deserves.
Yeah, that could be. But, you know, most of the time people are just puzzled over what they saw, and they're hoping I will tell them, and I try and give them just my best answer that I can. But there's no way that I can, even if I go and interview them in person, and if I, you know, just check things out right there and go where they saw the creature, I still can't say for sure usually what it is, but I just give them my best guess. And and I put the most interesting ones in the book and invite the readers to have their go at it.
Right.
I am really interested in, number one, well, I thought what you were talking about, the natural locations of cryptids, is really interesting about how it also corresponds quite a bit to UFO sightings, where UFOs are often seen over freshwater aquifers. I love the combo events. I love when UFOs are tied to cryptids, which are also then tied to stuff like what you were talking about. And what you were talking about, you're working on a documentary coming out as well about giant cats. And now we're not talking about, like, just jungle cats, giant cats. These things are actually very, very large versions of these animals, which is what you're talking about with these giant dogs, or maybe I've read accounts of giant birds, like the idea of the thunderbird, these things that are just, it is a bird, but it's 30 feet across. Where does that fit into the world of cryptids? Like, does that point more towards, like, cryptids are probably just animals we haven't discovered yet, or they are just weirder versions of animals we already know?
Well, actually, there's a good answer on each side. One is that, for instance, let's take the large cats, and I'm talking about mountain lions, like 6 feet long or so, that are coming back to the eastern states and midwestern states from the western places where it was driven to during extinction. These aren't terribly big, but then there are, for instance, there's one place in Wisconsin, there's an 18-mile square radius of sightings, 150 reports, and we know there are more than that, just in the past several decades, within this 18-mile radius in Wisconsin. And over half of them are large and black. And black or melanistic cougars are not supposed to exist in any way.
I can imagine that really tripping out a drunk Wisconsinite Just they must really freak out.
Oh my God,
them.
Wakanda's real.
Well, the thing is that most of these sightings were in daylight and close up because a lot of them were by farmers, Amish, that are out in their fields all the time, or people who live in rural houses and they see them out in the yard. And they don't see, in fact, the latest sighting of a large black one was early March this year. A guy on his back porch saw one just go nonchalantly through his backyard, walked all the way through, and went into the neighbors and found out his neighbor has had two sightings of them. So it's something that is very, very current. But the thing is, when they were sort of in exile down there in Arizona and western Texas, they had access to black jaguars and black leopards, both of which can be melanistic. And my thought, and the thought of the guy who's been collecting all these reports for years, is that they could have mated, the tan cougars and mountain lions could have mated with the black jaguars or leopards, and then come back, migrated back, and they look like a combination. Now, when you put two closely related members of a species that are a little different, they will very often show up as a larger offspring. For instance, the liger, the lion and the tiger breed will have this huge head that's like twice the size.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and we had one in a shelter here in southern Wisconsin for a while. I actually got to sort of pet its backside while it was pressed up against the wire fence. You know, and it did. It had this gigantic head that just kind of lolled from side to side. There's another shelter near Baraboo that has a liliger, which is a lion and a tiger, then bred back again with a lion. And it's the same way. It's got this big jaws and this head that looks way too big for the body, and the body's bigger. So it could be that it's a natural happening, you know, that goes along with inbreeding or interbreeding.
And Baraboo, by Wisconsin standards, is kind of a witchy town, isn't it? I mean, that's where the circus museum is anyway, and I went there when I was a child.
Yeah, it's still there. And Baraboo, and I go into this a little bit in the book too, Baraboo is the name given to the Baraboo Range, which is 20 miles, a 20-mile ridge of pink, very, very rare pink or reddish rosy quartzite.
Oh, cool.
It's some of the oldest, quote-unquote, dirt in the world. It was some of the earliest things formed, you know, when Earth was forming.
Right.
And when you have that much, just think 20 miles of quartzite, how much, and we know we use quartz for radio crystals and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens that right over the same little area of Hillsborough, there have been four or five really weird plane crashes.
Oh, interesting.
And it's not even on a flight path. We also had some very early UFO sightings. There were two farmers who independently saw these on their different farms and literally bumped into each other, dashing into town to the newspaper office to report it. And they said, they said it looked like two flying fence posts, for what they call them. There were two kind of long cylindrical things that appeared to be separate but locked in tandem with one another. And they were first seen heading from the east into the Hillsborough area. And then at one point, while both farmers were watching separately, they both lowered from vertical positions to horizontal positions, still in lockstep, and proceeded toward, get this, Wildcat Mountain.
Weird. Whoa. So what does quartz have to do? Is there something significant then about the quartz, why that would be a better home for cryptids or UFOs? Is there anything, is it an energy source, or is there any reason behind that?
Yeah, well, the quartz is, you know, kind of an energy amplifier of different types of waves, and there is something possibly connected to cryptids in that recent work has shown that even humans to a slight extent and many, many other animals, many more than we thought, have these what are called magnetoreceptors in their brains, which enable them to, for instance, that's how when you see, you know, a big bunch of blackbirds billowing in the sky and they're all making these complex patterns and following them, or when you see migrating birds or whatever, Even the fact that cows will usually lie down in a field with their mouths, their faces pointing one direction. They aren't like just lying randomly, if you ever noticed that.
Interesting.
And that can be part of something that you would surmise might attract cryptids, you know, things that are perhaps in a slightly different energy realm than we are to start with.
Now, I love cryptids. I love being able to talk about this. Do you feel like you get, like, is there, like, your specific approach, like, you're so curious and you're very pleasant. I just feel like it's very different when you meet some of these other Bigfoot hunters. I feel like some of the Bigfoot hunters kind of get into sort of a histrionic sort of a temperament. They get pretty upset with each other. There's
nice way of saying that.
There's a lot of drama in the Bigfoot world. I don't know if you've noticed. Where there's a lot of inter-fighting.
Yeah, I have. I generally am sort of out of that because I'm not strictly Bigfoot. You know, I have all these other cryptids, and many of them say we only look at Bigfoot. You know, if you see a giant snake thing in downtown Lake Geneva, you know, that's nothing to do with this. But I tend to be more in line with Don Keel, who noticed that so many of them show up at the same place, although they're very different looking cryptids. And it could be, there's even the theory that we are part of a larger area that is everywhere around the earth, and that this is a conscious, if non-personified thing, but it can interact with the human brain to manifest and to change. And, you know, it's another whole explanation for that. And so that's why you get these window areas where, you kind of alluded to this in the beginning. That's where you get the idea that creatures can change form according to what's handiest for them at that place and time.
See, I'm endlessly fascinated about it because I really do believe that cryptids, like UFOs, are here to, in a way, teach us something. Like, there's something we're supposed to learn some sort of lesson about our relationship to reality thanks to cryptids. How has your life changed in the last 20 years since you got into cryptids, since you fell into this rabbit hole?
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. My life has just become, I walk in the woods a lot more than I used to.
You sound like a man who got really also into alcohol, but it's really good.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I've done other things during my life. My degree is in art education. I have taught as an art teacher in public schools. I've painted both commercially and for fine art purposes. I still do a lot of illustrations. Now, I guess a big change would be that many of my illustrations are pen and ink drawings for my book.
Right.
It seems like things that I used to do just for fun now find their way into what I'm doing. And I have a lot more contacts as time goes on, and I've gotten to know many people. I will say, though, that there's always some, a little troublemaker here or there, but by and large, the people I work with, my colleagues, are just some of the best people I've ever known.
There's a lot of conservationists as well in Wisconsin, and I would assume that this is just a great reason. At the very least, this is a wonderful reason to get out to the woods, explore, and see what's going on with Mother Nature.
Right, it is. Although, if there is any dissension, it's probably between anyone who's looking for things like I am and the actual conservationists, the Department of Natural Resources in Wisconsin, because they are completely loath to admit, even when we have really good sightings, sometimes even with evidence, that they'll tell people, well, you saw a deer. You didn't see a Bigfoot. You didn't see a cougar right in front of you with its cat.
Right.
With its, you saw, maybe a bobcat. Well, bobcats weigh 36 pounds and have almost no tail.
Yeah, you saw Brett Favre out there. That you saw Brett Favre, and I know you did. And again, right. We are speaking with the author of I Know What I Saw, Linda S. Godfrey. Get this book, July 16th. This next Tuesday, get this book, I Know What I Saw. I was reading it last night, and it is a hoot.
But people don't want to take the topic seriously. That's the reason why they don't want to be involved in it. It's like the UFO world where we have been trained by the government to believe that if you are into these types of topics, that you are either crazy or you're dumb or you're gullible or you don't take life very seriously. So I could see that the conservationists don't want to touch it with a 10-foot pole because they're already fighting tooth and nail to get any sort of money, where it's just being like, if we could just say, like, I feel like the American people would actually understand better. Let's just save the goddamn forest for Bigfoot. All right, we're doing it for Bigfoot now.
Sure.
We're not even worried about us anymore.
Yeah, I think that the American people are more open-minded than anyone would believe, and I don't think Wall Street is going to crumble or, no. You know, bombs are going to go off or anything like that. These things were suddenly revealed to us. I think we can have more faith in people because really, what's going to change day to day if we know there have been extraterrestrials visiting the planet? Our lives aren't going to change that instant. And I think that's still a cover excuse for not let, I think there's more to it than that. It may be that there are benefits or something like that they're afraid people would have control of instead of the government. There might be explanations demanded for all the known underground military installations there are and
right.
others. Most people have no clue what a complete maze of underground
yep.
things there are, underground caverns, buildings, bomb shelters, even relics from the schools when there were huge underground areas for steam furnaces to vent and that sort of thing.
Yeah, all the hard targets, all the hard silos and stuff, yeah. I have a question, and this is a little bit about conservation and also about cryptids. Has climate change played any role when it comes to sightings or when it comes to the change in, like, I guess, cryptid demographics in a state like Wisconsin, going back to what you were talking about, with the liger and the big black cats coming, to Wisconsin for the first time? Has climate change played any role? Is there any research into that coincides with cryptozoology?
Well, I think that's possible. You know, if the climate change is taking away some of our wooded areas and making out there in L.A., you've got the horrible forest fires raging, because of the heat and other reasons, the dryness. So in those cases, you can understand why wildlife and even partial wildlife creatures would be looking for better homes. You know, if you're a Bigfoot and you're spending your annual spirit vacation on Earth, you want to go to a place where there's something good to eat,
yeah.
when you're going to be body dependent on food. So I don't see how it could help but affect anything that is in tune with our bodily vibrations at that point of solidity where we need certain things and they're not there. And that's why you are seeing more of these creatures. There was one fairly good-sized cougar that made it all the way from the Black Hills to Connecticut, where it was hit by a car finally, but it was tracked by its spore all the way there, and the DNA verified it. My husband was stalked by a cougar in our own backyard about 8 miles north of Elkhorn.
Oh my.
At night.
The only problem is that I wish that I didn't immediately associate it with Courtney Cox because from the show Cougar Town. So when you say a cougar, I know a lot of cougars of the female variety do move to Connecticut, and you do have to watch your husband.
Well, you can't hit him with a car. That's not allowed. So what was that story? So your husband was attacked by a cougar, Courtney Cox, an actual cougar.
No.
Okay.
Let's just say mountain lion.
Okay.
Of course. Yeah. I can be an adult about that.
Yeah, a mountain lion. And it was nighttime and he'd gone back to get something out of his boat. We had like an acre long yard and it was bounded on two sides by kettle moraine forest, which dropped straight down from our lot line.
Right.
And so you can see where something would be in there. And I've personally seen prints in that forest too, from from these cats, but you wouldn't expect it to be in your own backyard. So he went back to his boat, hears this kind of rawr type of sound, and his blood froze because he recognized what it had to be. And there was a big thump, and it landed like 3 feet in front of him. And he started yelling and kicking his feet. And unfortunately, all the neighbors were like on acre lots, too. Nobody heard him. I was in the house with earphones on doing a radio show.
Oh,
so I
nice.
Couldn't hear him. And he's backing up all the way because if one is stalking you, you can't turn your back on it. You have to try and keep eye contact.
Oh, my.
You know, kick and scream. But if it had gotten him, it could have just easily dragged him down into that 30-foot drop-off at that where it was at that point, and I wouldn't have known where he went or what happened to him.
Oh.
And he was absolutely—I came out of my office after doing the show, and he's a farm boy. He's a hunter. He's a fisherman. You know, not much fazes him. But his face was still completely white. I've never seen him look like that before.
Oh,
because
my gosh.
He came pretty close to it. So they're around here. We live in Janesville now, and there was
okay.
one spotted on the Rock River just a couple of weeks ago. And I looked, and we live on a lot that backs up to the green belt that surrounds Janesville. So anything trying to get around this area and down into Illinois would find it beautifully easy to walk through the green belt where there's
right.
you know, nothing allowed, no people. And where it would have had to probably go right through the green belt where we are. So, you know, it could have happened again. My next door neighbor saw a coyote in her backyard backing up to the green belt.
What would be your dream cryptid? What would be, is there any cryptid that you're still forever on the hunt for, even just trying to gather information? Any cryptid that you really want to explore more? Or did you basically hit everything that you wanted to hit in your new book, I Know What I Saw?
Well, I'd like still more examples of the dire dog, because I think that's just kind of, the separation is just sort of slowly becoming apparent. And it's something that I'm really on the watch for more of those. So that where people are saying, well, I saw this gigantic werewolf type thing that was, you know, slamming my car and it was as big as a bull calf. But
right.
you really can't say that it's a dog man if it never stands up, if you don't have any proof that it's, you know, that it has this humanoid property of some kind. And there are a few others. I became very much more interested in big birds, by the way, when I did American monsters, because I decided to,
right.
I divided it into flying, swimming, and walking or crawling things, and started out with the flying, and I had one of the best big bird recounts that I've ever heard right to start out with, and it was by a man from Minnesota who's
okay.
a retail wholesale light supplier. He's got a good business going, vacationing just across the river from St. Paul.
Okay.
In Wisconsin, and he's riding his bike down this little asphalt road, looks to his right, and there's a meadow with maybe 4 foot high grass, and there's this, he said it was like a giant big bird sitting on
cool.
A nest or something. He wasn't sure it was a nest. He only thought about it being a nest after he had dropped his bike and run halfway into the field in his excitement. And this is not a person who ever heard of cryptozoology. He's a 6 foot two guy. I drove up there to meet him and see the place and everything. And he said when he got close enough and realized it might be nesting, he stopped still in his tracks. And then the bird turned around and saw him, which was a moment of extreme fear because he realized how big it was and how close it was. And he said it started trying to fly. And he said he could see its wings were billowing as it was trying to catch enough air to get airborne, and it couldn't quite get going. It flapped over to this asphalt road where he had dropped his bike and went up the road. He was able to get more air with his wings, evidently, and he watched it flying up that road. And I measured, and he said its wings, as it first took that road, were touching on either side of the road. And I measured that road myself as 22 feet wide.
Whoa.
That's crazy.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And it was like it was most like a stork type of bird. He said it wasn't exactly a stork and couldn't really identify the species exactly. But it's such a great one because you have this person in close proximity in daylight He gets to see it on the ground, trying to fly and flying off. You know, plus just that close distance, you can't beat it. So it makes and most of the big bird sightings are up in the air. There's nothing to compare it to, and it's really deceptively hard to try to guess the size of something that's just in the sky with no reference.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Because you have to do a lot of, I've learned from my MUFON training manual, how you're supposed to place the object in the sky, and you're supposed to add it with all of the different, you have to like choose landmarks on the horizon and then get a protractor and all that stuff. And I am not as, I'm going to say the word detail-oriented as some people in the MUFON community would like me to be.
Yeah, there's a lot of things. Or hold your arm out full length and, you know, make a circle with your thumb and forefinger and see how it fits into that. They have all sorts of methods.
Can I ask, I don't know if you've ever seen Saturday Night Live, the Chris Farley show. There's a sketch in there where Chris Farley asks really dumb questions to Paul McCartney. I'm going to do this to you as well. I'm sorry, Linda. You have done many appearances on Coast to Coast AM.
Yes.
Love the show. That's the reason why we exist. Have you ever been invited to George Norrie's house?
I have not, but I was invited to meet with him in his studio, actually, in person.
Oh, nice. And
what's the studio like?
It's just an immaculate little set, you know, with kind of a visual in the background. And
does he have a lot of, like, ladies in there with, like, a bunch of champagne on the rocks and stuff like that? Is it a nice green room?
I don't think that's George Norrie's life, Henry.
You don't know. He's slick.
Well, the green room has really nice, healthy selections.
Good.
But he doesn't go in the green room, at least in my experience, at the same time as the guest. And they did have one woman who was the hair and makeup person.
Nice.
And that was kind of nice. That seemed luxurious to me. And he's very kind and pleasant, but he's on a very, very busy schedule.
Of course.
Does these interviews, bing, bing, bing. And so it wasn't like I got to have a long chat with him or anything. But
right. No, okay. Well, yeah, because he has to sit backstage. They have to snap his hair on. They got to do a lot of stuff.
He's not a Lego.
He's got a lot going on.
Henry has a strange fascination with the life of George Norrie. And
I want to know more about his inner life. I want to know more about his home life.
I don't think there's that much going on, Henry. I don't think. But anyway, just going back to cryptids briefly here. When it comes to, obviously, the Midwest, you mentioned Minnesota, Wisconsin. We've got a lot of lakes over there. Have you done any explorations of sea cryptids, of lake cryptids, saltwater cryptids, freshwater cryptids? Do they like saltwater more than freshwater and so on?
Yeah, I wrote a kind of smallish book called Lake and Sea Monsters for Chelsea House in New York some years ago. And so I did quite a bit for that, and then for the weird Wisconsin and weird Michigan and strange Wisconsin and strange Michigan, I was surprised really how many communities have their legends of some type of lake monster or river monster or whatever, and how far they go back into Native American records, too. So, it's been hard not to. One of the very best, coincidentally, I seem to be in the perfect location for investigating all of these things because they're all here, but Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, which if you lived in Cedar Point, you know where that's kind of the playground right almost down the state line between Wisconsin and Illinois, has this beautiful lake. It's the second deepest lake in Wisconsin. And it once was just this quiet, picturesque. There were a few steamboats that plied the waters and paddle boats. And then in the early 1900s up to maybe the 30s, they started seeing what everybody called a lake monster, and it was nicknamed Jenny for the Geneva Lake. And it looked, the descriptions reminded me of the Loch Ness, plesiosaur type of body structure. And there were people were coming up from Chicago just to see it. There was a very well-known local minister who, swore in his Bible that he had actually seen it. There were people that saw it close up because they waited for it. There was a group of young men that waited for it in their boat. And then as soon as it showed, they started paddling out toward it and looked at them and started paddling toward them. And so they turned around and paddled back to shore. But they all, got a pretty good look at it.
That makes sense.
And this thing persisted until boat motors started coming into vogue and the boats were getting bigger. And you can imagine if you're living in a lake like that, or as I'm sure, because that lake is spring fed, that you can see where the Native Americans would have thought they were coming from another dimension. They may have just been going through deep underground channels that were connected by these springs that also filled the lake up.
Right.
But as soon as the lake traffic got terrible, then you didn't see this creature anymore. It just kind of stopped coming.
Boats, get out of there.
Yeah, that's such a pain. That's a problem, is that we do scare a lot of the cryptids away. We scare them.
Well, they can't, yeah, they can't manifest if there's a lot of other things going on that could slightly hurt their bodies, even though, and this gets into the realm of the other interesting question, which is, why can't you shoot any of them? And so many people have emptied automatic clips and had absolutely no effect, whether they're the dogmen or the Bigfoot or even some of the big birds.
Right.
And then Native Americans believe that if you see a white big bird, that's a sign of spirit animals. And I've had those reported in Wisconsin and other places. So, you know, it's just like, what are all these people seeing? How is it that we all see the same things?
Right.
You know, blends of animals and humans. I mean, if our minds are just wacko, willy-nilly importing things from another consciousness, why aren't we seeing really weirder things? You know, like octopuses floating over city halls, or, you know, just wild stretches of the imagination.
Yes.
And instead, we fit into these same molds that go all the way back to, say, the Sumerians. You know, they had Pazuzu, which was an evil thing, but it was a huge winged bird-like creature that was part of their lineup of deities. And the Egyptians had Anubis, the black-furred, pointy-eared god of the dead. And I have witnesses all the time, especially when they're the spooky kind of sighting where it's inside your bedroom at night, they'll say it looked just like that Egyptian Anubis.
Mm,
and so we're seeing the same things over centuries and millennia. And either, you know, the psychologist Jung was right that we all have this interior parade of things he called archetypes.
Right.
And that's endemic in the human race somehow. Or there's something else going on. Maybe there is a place where they look like this. Maybe there are mimics of creatures as well. I kind of compare it sometimes to ghosts. Ghosts are much more popular and much more often seen than the cryptids. Almost everybody either has seen or has somebody in their family who has seen what they call a ghost. What do the ghosts that have form look like? They look like mimics of human beings.
Mm-hmm. That is truly what I also believe about, especially with you. That's also what I've come to believe with UFOs as related to military sites, is that a lot of times I do believe that it is another intelligence copying us, like in an attempt to communicate. Like they reach into our subconscious and they choose images almost that we would recognize, or they attempt to act like we act so that we will respond to them.
Right. Yeah. They're experimenting on us, actually. But there's another story in one of those books where two of my colleagues and I were doing a stakeout in a field and had a basketball sized, although we didn't realize what size it really was until it got to the car. I noticed it first. It was above a tree line across a hayfield, and I noticed that it had stopped in midair. We were watching a flight line of airplanes, and this one stopped in midair, backed up, and I said to my two colleagues who were in the front seat, guys, that one's not a plane. And as soon as the three of us focused on it, and I think this is sort of key, it like homed in on us and began crossing the field. Now, one of these guys is an architect from Chicago. The other one is an Illinois retired math and physics teacher. And both with a lot of field experience, and myself in the back seat, and I've been out a few times. And so we would know, I think, if it was something recognizable. It took less than a minute, maybe 30 seconds, to get across the field to us. It did not deviate or go down to the ground or bounce around, you know, like people claim gas from Martians do or anything like that. It came straight toward us. It stopped. It was about 25 feet in the air, we estimated, and the size of a basketball, and about that distance from the car. So we got a really good look.
That's cool.
And Oh, it was, we did, you know, we were just like in a panic because we didn't know what it was, what it was going to do.
Right.
And I was grasping for a position with my camera because I had these two big guys between it and me. And I was trying to get a picture.
Get out of the way.
Yeah, exactly. And the one who was driving, we had a large torchlight flashlight in the car. And he just instinctively grabbed it and shined it up at this object, which was kind of giving off its own light, yet not lighting up the area, but itself illuminating. When that flashlight hit it, we all had the feeling, the three of us, that it was surprised. And it took a little bit, it made this jittering kind of motion. We had a hard time agreeing on the word for it, but we finally decided that was the way to put it. It kind of jittered in its place and then just disappeared in on itself.
So it's almost like it's, hi, hello, hi, like it's, it wants you to be looking at it.
Yeah, or like, why did they notice me? What are they doing in that field? You know, that it was probably very curious. And the driver just felt like he had to get out of the car and see if it went behind a nearby stand of bushes. And I wasn't going to do that, to be honest, and neither was the other one. But he went around behind, and in a few seconds, he came walking back to the car, and he said, I feel terribly ill. We have to go. I'm really sick.
Oh, he goodness.
Got a, yeah, and I mean, he was okay, but we had to leave. There was no question, partly because he was driving. I think I would have tried to stay, but maybe, you never know, maybe he saved us from being abducted. Who knows?
Who knows? Because that's very interesting.
It is very interesting.
Yeah. Well, this is awesome.
All three of us thought, yeah, all three of us thought completely and agreed, you know, which is also unusual.
I just sort of have a personal question because I grew up in Wisconsin and I know it's a very religious community. Have you gotten any blowback? Like, you know, because oftentimes with religious people, they don't want to talk about any of these things, aliens, because it shatters their worldview. Or do you think that, so basically, have you gotten any blowback from the religious communities out there? Or do you think that it's possible to be a cryptozoologist and like a religious person? Can they coincide? Can they run, concurrent?
Well, I'm an example. I'm a Lutheran Christian, have pretty much been all my life. But I've also, studied in other things because I've always been very interested in all aspects of religion. And, as I feel, as long as I'm not out there chanting mantras or, trying to learn how to become a werewolf or,
I would like to do that.
Yeah, doing that kind of thing. And I think... people generally get it, where I'm coming from. Yeah, okay. And I don't really have any big problem with it myself. But again, I really am not proselytizing, and I'm not making up, I'm not judging or anything like that. I'm just trying to see what these things are. And actually, in some ways, I think it's strengthened my own faith because I've realized, hey, at least one side of these phenomena are real.
Right.
And so why wouldn't, the better side of these things, the least spooky of these sides of things also be real? And to me, it shows that there is another world. There are things that that we can't explain with normal means. And there's more to the world than our puny little brains.
I'm with you. Honestly, yeah. I'm with you on that. That's kind of what we've been talking about for a long time, is that I feel like that the answers that people seek, especially like cryptids and UFOs, are going to be more about understanding the psychic nature of our universe than just trying to get a bag of Bigfoot droppings, which, I mean, you can get, I can make
you
in my
can
house.
Make those?
Yes, absolutely. Also, and they sell them at every, which I actually feel is like a pointed sort of subtweet, that they sell bags of Bigfoot droppings at the airport in Portland. That's funny for people who are really looking for the truth.
Wisconsin sells, candy called cow pies.
Oh, oh yeah. I know the cow pie. Yes,
and the real
God.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being with us today, Linda. This has been awesome. It's so nice to talk to a fellow Wisconsinite. You see how nice we are in Wisconsin, but not even, we're nice, but we're not weak though, Henry.
I think that you're very nice. This is where we talk about the difference between Wisconsinites and Canadians.
Yes, we're strong of heart and mind. I know what I saw. That is the book. Get it. July 16th. Linda S. Godfrey. thank you so much for being on the show. And of course, when does the television series come out, or the documentary series?
Well, the documentary is it's one documentary, okay. And it's called Return to Wildcat Mountain. And you can search it either on YouTube or Bigfoot. Search Return to Wildcat Mountain, and you can see the trailer.
Awesome.
And updates there.
Return to Wildcat Mountain. Find that on YouTube for the trailer. Thank you so much, Linda. We really appreciate it.
Oh, I had a great time. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you.
Live from your grave.
There it was. That was. See, Henry? Look at that.
What are you saying? Why do you keep saying see to me like I said? Because I know you don't think anything's happening in Wisconsin.
You don't think anything wild is happening in Wisconsin.
What are you talking about? Hey, fucking Ed Gein is from Wisconsin.
All right.
Jeffrey Dahmer's from Wisconsin. Yeah, I understand. Wisconsin is filled with a lot of shit. I know. I've spent time in Wisconsin. No, the whole time, though, is because my mom's name is Linda.
Oh, yes.
So the whole time, I was being going like, oh, you couldn't believe the size of the bird I saw in the backyard the other day. Oh, Henry Thomas, I feed it hot dogs so it comes back.
I named it Henry the Third.
It's my third son. No, because my mom calls me and tells me about the birds.
Mom is going to find the only cryptid that's going to die of nitrate poisoning because she fed it so many hot dogs, and she's going to be like, I have this cryptid in my backyard, Henry. It's dead.
Henry Thomas, the Bigfoot came in last night when your father was out at the Publix, and I swear to God, he was so romantic. Your father's forgotten me. He's forgotten how to treat a wife in a proper way.
Your impression of your mother is getting weirder and weirder.
Worse and worse.
I think you're just getting ready for single Linda, and single Linda is going to be on the prowl.
I don't want it, man.
Yes, indeed. All right. Well, that is, again, Linda Godfrey. Get her book, I Know What I Saw. It really is super fun, and they're really quick little vignettes, quick stories, so you can read it while doing your business if you want to. Do whatever. And
are you saying this is a good book on the shitter? That's your ad for the book?
It's quick. You can read it. You can either read it for 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 5 minutes. It goes with any amount of time. Anyway.
If you're waiting for death row, if you're outside of a funeral home killing time before looking at the urns, this is a great book.
All right. Well, thank you all so much for listening. And seriously, thank you all so much for giving to our Patreon. We can't wait to see you all on the road. We'll see you in Oakland, Los Angeles, San Diego. And then, of course, we're traveling the world once again. So we really appreciate you. Without you, we don't exist, and we never lose sight of the DIY process that this has always been.
Thank you for your money.
It's good.
Keep giving it.
There you go. Nailed it. Thanks so much for listening, everyone. Hail yourselves.
Hail Satan.
Magustalations.
Goodbye.